Welcome to M&A Access, the official podcast of the Alliance of M&A Advisors. My name is Gina Galusha, and I'm coming at you from Summer Conference in Chicago. Today, we have Nick Phillips with us from Biggs Cofford. Nick, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, we would love to hear your story of how you got into the biz. What does that progression look like? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so I started at Biggs Cofford fresh out of college with this aspiration to become a CPA and to do accounting. And I was so excited in college.
You don't look like an accountant.
Well, I have the glasses for it.
Okay.
And right. It's,
And the responsibility?
And the responsibility of wearing these glasses and looking like an accountant. But I practiced tax for about 4 years. And Chris Blees is the managing director of Biggs Cofford Capital. A little background on our firm is a boutique investment bank working with companies in the $2 to $8 million, $10 million EBITDA range and industry agnostic. So really working with founder owners. And he would grab me, and I'd work on deals with him. And so excited. This is the most fun, way better than tax. So I always prioritize his tasks over tax to an extent. And after about 2 years, he invited me to come work full-time in the investment bank. That was about 10 years ago now.
Wow. Have you ever asked him, like, what enticed him to pluck you out of the sad, gray life of an accountant?
Well,
no offense to accountants out there. We love
you.
Yes.
I'm about to offend all the accountants. He said I was annoying all the other accountants because I liked to talk and I liked, really understand financials and get real deep into, the businesses. Basically, they said I was too extroverted, and they kicked me out.
Oh, you were too chatty.
Too chatty.
You're kind of interested in the whys, though, right? Not just the what.
I tried to understand, what was going on in the P&L, and they just said my personality really fit the investment bank better than the tax department. And and Chris was looking for someone, and, I was always super excited about building Excel models, and he just said that it would be a good fit. So fast forward, 10 years, been working at Biggs Cofford, working on transactional work.
And here you are.
Yep.
I, not to admit to being a creeper, but I have watched the progression and loved watching the progression of when I first met you and Chris, you would kind of follow him and he would lead the meetings and you would sit and listen. And I will never forget the one time he didn't come to conference because, he's die hard. And he was like, well, yeah, Nick's got the table. It's all good, and just kind of set you free into the wilderness. And so it's been fun to watch that.
It's been really, really exciting because the investment bank was just Chris and I when I first started. Mm-hmm. And basically I was in on all the meetings and on every deal we worked on, and I was his right hand. And now we've built a department, right? We've got, five people, including myself, running deals. And I'm sorry, six, including Chris, but five running deals on the day-to-day. And so it's been really fun. Chris has empowered me to build the department and to train my team and to, manage transactional work and our sell sides. So I've really cherished that. And he's been such an incredible mentor for me. It's amazing. If I could be half as good of a boss as him, it's crazy. But he takes so much time out of his day to explain everything and go super, super in depth. Just a phenomenal teacher and mentor. So I've really, really lucky.
Absolutely agree on the teacher part. And that makes such a huge difference in a leader, right? When they're willing to sit down and not just say, do this thing, but let me tell you why we do this thing, and being willing to hear those questions and answer them, and that patience and that love for exchanging knowledge. What would you say if you could share three big Chris takeaways from your time with him in the last 10 years that you have really taken in and made part of your practice?
Man, that's a tough question. You know, I think Chris is so good with clients. And he really takes the time to understand their business and their needs, and he owns projects in, you know, like it's his business. You know, three things.
Well, okay, what's the first thing that stands out to you? You said he really gets to know his clients and their needs.
He's always proactive in the way he approaches clients. And he's always forward thinking, right? Like anticipating the next, you know, the next phase of the deal, or looking at a company holistically and what's best for them. Listening to their goals, putting their goals first is another thing that he really, you know, really seeks to understand. The other thing with Chris is he's so creative. I don't want to say, you know, you can't be too creative in accounting or you go to jail, but yeah, he's very creative. He thinks outside the box. And he, I mean, just phenomenal leader, really. So full of energy. And I don't know if he ever takes a break.
I think he's always working. Because when he is resting, he is also just like climbing mountains.
He has taught me to dream about work, apparently.
Oh.
He's like, yeah, I thought of this. I was like, I woke up, I had this dream about work. I was like, yeah, did you build a client for it?
He should build a client. Okay, so if you guys can't tell, we have a Chris Love. And Chris is one of our SEMA instructors. He's one of the originals who helped build the SEMA program. So if you want to learn a little bit from Chris, too, you should take SEMA.
Should absolutely take the SEMA.
You took SEMA.
I did take the SEMA.
What, how was that experience for you? How did it kind of help you set up for success?
What I loved, also, I got a unique experience of hearing some of the SEMA from Chris as he was mentoring me and teaching me about investment banking. Because, you know, I went to school for accounting, so I had to play a little bit of catch up in the first couple years of my career. So the SEMA course was basically, and at this point I had already gone through one or two deals, which I think was instrumental in learning during the SEMA course. Because the SEMA course is like a crash course on every little thing that you can experience or run into in a deal. And it gives you deep insight into each different phase and the, you know, the best way to manage those phases. So I think for people trying to get into investment banking or buying a business, I find it really interesting that some owners have taken the SEMA course to, you know, when they're going to sell their business, to become more knowledgeable about what to expect and how to build value in a business. But yes, I really enjoyed it. I loved the connections I made in my my course, and I thought it was truly insightful on the deal process.
So going back to kind of like what you've learned and how you've grown, I have two questions for you to ponder. One, what would you say that you've kind of discovered about Nick in this process, in your particular way of approaching the client and approaching the deal and those kinds of things? And then where do you want to go from here?
Well, what I've found that I truly love about working with lower middle market businesses is being that resource for my client in more ways than just the deal. Regularly, I'll be on the phone at 8 o'clock at night with a client talking about issues in their business or advice that they want that may not even be deal related. And I really like being that resource. And what I found is that, you know, being a business owner is actually truly a lonely profession, right? There's the people out there, you know, that work for them don't understand the plight of the business owner, and that the risk that they bear every day and the decisions that they make that impact their company and their families. And so I've found that I really love being that resource for clients and business owners during one of the most pivotal moments of their lives. You know, they built this business, blood, sweat, and tears, sacrifice, and, you know, now it's time for them to find a good home for it and to secure their family's wealth, or to find a partner that's going to help them grow and, you know, take the business to the next level. And so, yeah, that's something I've really found that I get energized by.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Before we get to that other question, you and I were talking earlier today about how you love working with family offices because they're great partners for your clients.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I feel like a lot of my clients don't exactly want their business run through a private equity ringer, where there's a 5-year investment horizon. Not all of them. Some of them are like, you know, I want whatever's going to provide the best opportunity for my business. But a lot of my clients will say that, you know, I want legacy super important to me. My people are super important to me, and you know, valuation is important. But you know, like this is I care about these people. Like they're the people that have helped get my business to where it is today, and they like the longer term horizon. So they're not just being, so the business isn't just being transacted every few years. It isn't being exactly squeezed for every dollar. You know, like sometimes you hear with private equity or being an add-on, merging an enterprise into another can be very disruptive and scary for employees. So, you know, there's, you know, family office is, I think, a great alternative to a pure private equity buyer that has a little bit more patient capital, and I think that can have a little bit more, you know, a more delicate touch sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or family.
Family orientated office. You know, because typically, I mean, those families built their wealth by building a business,
mm-hmm.
and they understand,
so they get it.
They get it.
They
yeah.
get it. Yeah. Now that you have had the opportunity to be a part of building this team at Big Covert, because now you guys are your own department there, right?
Yeah, rather than just Chris and Nick team.
The duo.
Yeah. It was dynamic. It was great, honestly.
I think it still is.
It still is. I mean, Chris and I work together every day.
Mm-hmm.
He knows exactly
mm-hmm.
what's going on.
Yeah. I was on a call the other day with Emily, and you two were chitter-chattering in the background, and she had to move to a different room.
We're both very loud, and that's why in our office, they put Chris and I in, for one, separate sides of the office that don't have a ton of people around us. So,
so that you're not distracting.
Less
it comes
disruptive.
Back to why they took you out of accounting in the first place.
Yeah, they kicked me out. Get out of here.
So what are you looking forward to now? Where, how do you want to grow?
You know, I really want to build, I really like my team. I want to build them up. Emily has been instrumental in the department. Someone I can rely on, you know, all of my tough engagements. And so I want to lift her up and continue developing her. And then, I want to build a larger investment banking practice.
What do you think is a key to building up a great team in investment banking?
I think it's support, accountability, and I mean, honestly, it's my team has a lot of fun. Like, maybe too much fun sometimes. Like, not in a, like, we go out and party and stuff, but, like, you know, we're always laughing, joking around, and, you know, making sure that we've got, you know, a fun working dynamic, because it is a lot of hard hours, and can be extremely stressful, you know, tight turnarounds and stuff like that. So, you know, making sure my team has the resources that they need and that I'm setting a good example for them, I would ever ask them to do something that I wouldn't do myself, or, you know, make them work more hours than me. I will be right there next to them, leaving the office when they leave the office. So
yeah, gone are the days of the analysts in the closet working 20 hours a day.
No, sometimes that does still happen, you know, and we mostly put them in the closet as a joke, but,
that's where you start having all that fun you have, right?
You're going to have so much fun in this closet working for 20 hours. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
But it does happen, or it used to happen a lot more than it does now. I feel like it's a more humane community of professionals. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it is a little more humane. I don't know. I mean, once again, we're kind of homegrown, you know? Like, it's not like Chris never worked at another investment bank. I've never worked at another investment bank. So if those investment banks are putting analysts in a closet for 20 hours, then, I mean, that's a standard practice. I just don't know about it.
Right.
You
know? Right. So. That's fair. So you come to conference a lot. I see you in the sessions. And education seems to be pretty important to you. How do you go about learning? Well, no, let me take this back. How do you go about deciding, okay, what's my next learning horizon? Where do I need to grow next? Do you find that because in a deal you're like, oh, dang, you know, that structure, I don't know enough about it. Or is there another way that you discover your areas of opportunity for education and growth?
Well, I mean, this profession, you can always learn more. I mean, there's no end to the learning here, and so it's a, you know, you have to be constantly learning on the fly, to be honest. With if a deal has something you're not educated on, then you have to find the expert to help you with that, or to help you understand that. What's great about Biggs Cofford is that we are a CPA firm and we have a ton of resources in that area. And so that helps with structuring and tax and stuff like that if we need it. You know, when I'm coming to the conference, I do end up speed dating a lot of the private equity groups that come here. But I do carve out time for market updates. You know, there's some I wanted to learn more about kind of the impact of AI on the M&A landscape. So I signed up for that one. But basically, you know, if I see something that piques my interest, I absolutely want to attend them, and they're super valuable. So,
all right, you said something earlier. I want to go back to a little bit. You said speed dating private equity. So, in a moment like that, how in the Hades do you evaluate? Yes, I think this is a good fit for my client. When it's a 20-minute meeting, what are the feelers you put out there? What are the spidey senses you engage? Or do you have kind of a framework to evaluate?
You know, if it's a group I haven't run across, I typically will find out what they're interested in. And that's actually where I get a lot of my market insight is, you know, what are you guys going after? What are your new theses about? And so that's for me to figure out, all right, what kind of clients do I want to sign up for a sell side engagement? What, you know, or what, who do I know at the CPA firm that has a client contact that is in that industry? So that's one thing I really like to get out of that. Another is, you know, understanding how they like to deploy their resources to help my clients grow, and empower their management teams. I think that's, that's typically what sells my client on if they are a good fit is, you know, What is my day-to-day going to look like after I transact and partner with this group? You know, other than that, I'd like to hear their stories, right? You know, tell me about this platform. What have you guys done? You guys have grown at this much. How did you do that? You know, some questions like that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's good. How about with your, on the other side of that coin, with your client? How do you get a sense of, because sometimes, especially those people who've been at the top and been alone at the top, don't necessarily know who they are, right? They don't necessarily always know, how do I say this, what is a good fit for them. You know, is it to stay on? Is it to let your baby go and just rip the Band-Aid off, right? So how do you get a sense of what kind of exit's going to be best for which kind of client?
This is one of my favorite things to do with a client, is because business owners don't really understand all the different types of transactions that you can go through, right? And, you know, they feel that there's a... I'm going to sell my business and I'm going to be gone and that's it. Right. And you know, it's going to be to a strategic or, you know, maybe I'm going to sell to my management team.
Cause that's what my friend at the golf club did.
Yeah. The golf club metrics. Right. so yes, I, this comes back to goals. What do you want? Right. You know, cause there's there's a ton of different transactions that you can find that will fit. You know, the goal is I really want to be in charge for the next 5 to 10 years, but you know, I need more capital, or I, you know, want to de-risk my own personal balance sheet and take some chips off the table. But you know, typically that's not what they're saying. Typically, they're saying, you know, I'm getting a little bit older. I'm thinking about kind of the next stage. And I want to keep my management team in place, but I'm afraid of private equity because, you know, they're going to put a whole new management team in place, or we're going to be rolled up into another another entity. And then you can start, you know, dissecting what their goals are and coming up with, well, you know, here's a group that's going to empower your management team, give them equity, or, you know, and... you know, you can be along for the ride. You can sell majority of your equity, or you can, you know, or you can roll a majority of your equity and be a part of that next story, or kind of phase out. I mean, there's not one typical transaction. Mm-hmm. So
it's not a transaction in a box.
Yeah, exactly.
How often, when you're working with a new client, do you learn something new about business?
Oh man. Basically, every time I work with a new client, I'm learning a new industry. I mean, that's the part I love about working with business owners to transact, is you get such an in-depth knowledge or experience in their business and how it functions and who are the people and how they empower their people and things that worked and things that didn't work and the industry that they're in and the industry landscape. I mean, there's so much that you take away in the 9 months you're working with a business, right? So constantly learning, and you know, what's great about this as well is that you're working with businesses that can transact typically are going to be better businesses run mm-hmm. better. Mm-hmm. So you get to learn how these business owners have built this over the years, and that's super cool.
How often are you able to take those little nuggets that you've learned, and when a business comes to you that maybe isn't ready, is it helpful to know those nuggets so you can pinpoint, hey,
absolutely,
this is where you
need
to grow. We're
not going to have a good process is one of the harder conversations, but you know, we on the front end of our transactions, we do something called a market value study where we assess the business. Mm-hmm. We reach mm-hmm. out to probably about 5 or 6 buyers in the space and ask them what they're looking for, what kinds of things kill deals for them, what does valuation typically look like, and you know, get some insight into that particular industry from real buyers. We call that a market value study. Summarize that in a report, give it to the business owner and say, hey, here's the things that you really need to work on. You know, easy things like customer concentration, over-reliance on the owner. You know, you really need to empower your management team, because how important you are for the business, sometimes counterintuitive to the business owner, how important you are to the business is actually going to detract value. It's actually going to scare a lot of business owners off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, having those kind of conversations and say, you know, we think you're going to transact for, you know, this multiple range, and here are the reasons why. If you worked on those things, you could transact for a, you know, another turn or two of EBITDA.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's really, you're not ready to go to market. You're, you know, you have too large of a customer concentration. Growth has been stagnant. Your margins have been compressed over the last few years. You're really not ready. You need to work on these things. You know, and that usually ends up being a, you know, an engagement where we just do value consulting for the next couple of years, keep our finger on the pulse of the business and then on the market, meet up with them every, you know, 6 months or so to kind of get an update and see when they might be ready to go to market.
Maybe this analogy is unkind of me, but sometimes...
You unkind?
Never.
You're delightful to talk to.
Always. Except when I'm yanking off the street to join a podcast. So
yeah, very uncomfortable.
I can see how in one of those moments when, you know, it's almost like a dance mom, right? They made this child. This child is beautiful.
And
this
I just called their baby ugly.
Yes, exactly. How often do they, how do you mitigate those feelings? Because I can see that.
It depends on how ugly
you to support them.
I called their baby. You know, there's only been a handful of cases where, you know, the business owner has ever been like kind of, I wouldn't say offended or anything, or, you know, kind of, we never really worked with on the back end of these things. But you know, really it's, you know, it's objective. We're not ripping their business apart to rip their business apart. Like, believe me, I want to sell your business. I really do. But what's best for you is that you work on these key things, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to have a much better outcome. And, you know, generate more wealth or, you know, whatever. It really is. It's try to take, be empathetic. I mean, there's been a couple instances where, you know, a company comes to us and we look at it and we're like, there's nothing we can do. Like this, where you're at right now, there's no transaction that I think makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And those are the really hard conversations.
I bet. Yeah. No, because I mean, with the others, you can say, here's the ways we can help.
Yeah.
Here's the timeline.
Here's all the things that you can do to turn your business, or double the enterprise value of your business. I mean, business owners get really empowered. And that's the other thing about this is, it opens up their eyes and they say, okay, I can do those things, and it can be really, really empowering. And you know, we have gone out to market with a couple businesses that, you know, went through a process, and at the end of it, something killed the deal, right? And those are so empowering. You literally see these guys or these business owners go and start implementing all the things that they, as they're going through due diligence, they felt slightly insecure about, like, oh, I don't really have that. I don't have this. And they're implementing all these things that they learned throughout the process to be better positioned for the next sale. And those are really fun stories.
It's like
you started running your business when you, to sell it, you started running your business better. I don't know. I really, really enjoy watching that, because even, you know, it's like this painful due diligence process, and if you just came out of that without anything, man, brutal.
That would be brutal.
Brutal.
Because it's so vulnerable.
It is super vulnerable, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a story of a time that you pulled a crazy Hail Mary to get a deal over the finish line?
I mean, there's always things that you have to make concessions on, or you sometimes make concessions on to close a transaction. I do remember one deal I was working on where the owner decided the night before to pull his rolled equity. He's like, I'm not going to roll any equity over some small thing. And so at 1 o'clock in the morning, we had an all hands call. And what was crazy is we got what we wanted. After he pulled his rolled equity.
Whoa.
At 1 a.m. And it was
at the finish line.
And, you know, in the grand scheme of the whole transaction, this one particular item really was not significant, right? And I think it was just the nitpicking and the death by a thousand cuts that my client just said, nope. I'm not rolling any equity, and we can close tomorrow if you guys you know, are comfortable with that. I actually really enjoyed the, I wouldn't say thoroughly. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. The person that was working for the private equity group called me at 11 at night. Actually, this was the day before Thanksgiving.
Of course.
And she calls me just. He's pulling his World Equity. We can't do that. That's like we'll have to go back to our investment committee. And we're going to be 3 weeks out from closing. This just cannot happen. And I was like, okay. It sounds like, you know, we probably should find a solution here. And my client's really passionate about this. So, you know, maybe you should talk to counsel and we figure out if we can get past this. We got what we wanted. I was sweating. It was not a fun conversation at 11 o'clock at night, but,
but that was the best Thanksgiving dinner you've ever had.
Oh, man, I had so much cranberry sauce. It was a pretty...
The victory pie.
It was a victory, yeah. But it's just kind of like if private equity groups could just reduce the death by 1,000 cuts to clients or to business owners,
mm-hmm.
you know, it wouldn't push them quite that far.
We were just in the market update talking mm-hmm. about how 40% of deals don't close, and a lot of that is inefficiencies. Either, you know, if in the preparation,
mm-hmm.
right, or in that diligence moment. What do you think are kind of the major hurdles that could be fixed or refined to diminish the cuts?
Diminish the cuts? I think making sure that the deal was very well spelled out at the time of LOI would probably reduce the amount of cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure the business owner has good legal representation that understands the deal at the timing of signing the LOI, so that when we're going through the legal process and arguing over all the various provisions in the purchase agreement... It would be more streamlined in that manner. I think business owners or, you know, investment bankers should do a deep dive into the business to make sure there's nothing glaring at them that's going to kill deals. And having a diligence room built out prior to signing the LOI would also streamline
mm-hmm.
that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And are there...
But actually, I'm sorry. I mean, also educating the client.
Right.
Making sure they understand... what to expect. And I basically, this is whenever I talk to a business owner about, or, you know, tell them about what to expect after signing the LOI. I'm like, well, we're about 10% of the way through the process. We have 90% left.
Because they think like you're almost there.
We're almost there.
They want me.
I mean, not even close. And I try to, you know, describe to them how horrible the due diligence process is going to be. You're going to feel very vulnerable. And there's going to be 500 requests, and we're just going to have to take it one bite at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually say, like, I wish I could adequately describe this process to you, but I'm going to fall short, and you're still going to feel like this is the worst thing you've ever went through. But it's going to be pretty tough.
Preparation of expectations.
Preparing, yep.
Yeah. I have a similar story, totally different. I used to take my students on their senior trip, and I would prepare them for the very worst. Like, you will miss flights, you will sleep on airport floors, you will, you know, and just walk them through. These are the things that might happen, but it's still going to be a great ride, right? We're still going to
have
a good time.
So much fun.
And one of the other teachers came to me and she's like, Gina, did you tell them there's no toilet paper in Italy? And I was like, no. I did not.
There's only bidets. And it's going
to
be horrible.
I tell them you might need to pack some just in case. But, you know, like that preparation of expectations, it's so much easier.
I've never brought my own toilet paper.
To Italy?
Be honest with you. No.
No. But you've never needed it either, have you?
No, of course not. I never
need
toilet paper.
You're good. I bet they're going to cut all of this. But my point is that if you
that
really
in.
Heighten the expectations of what could suck, but the reason why you're still doing this, and remind them you talked earlier about the goals, that makes a big difference in their mindset as they approach it, right?
Mm-hmm. This is, yeah, I mean, this is the end goal, right? I mean, obviously, to sell your business, it's a lot of work. You're going to feel like you're doing you're going to have two jobs at least. Your management team's going to be stressed. You're going to be stressed. And, I mean, it's pretty special, like, having someone trust you to that level with their baby.
For sure. I can see the honor in it. Are there ways that when the management team is so stressed, like you mentioned, what are they getting out of this, right? And how do you work them through the process, too, when they don't have that goal line in front of them?
Well, it's maybe you got to understand what their goals are and what incentivizes them to be excited about a transaction. And it's very dependent upon, you know, it's case by case with each business, right? For instance, working with a business right now that's been owned a family for a very, very long time. And they are looking and saying, you know what, having the resources and being a part of a larger organization is not only going to make our products better and what we do better and our stakeholders happier, you know, their clients and vendors, and it's going to provide more opportunity for my management team, because we're a small business. Like, the management team can grow only as far as the business can take them, right?
That's fair.
So they're all kind of capped out at their level, and, you know, being a part of a large organization will provide significant more opportunities for their management team to, once again, deliver a better product, provide stability and longevity to the business if there is some, I don't know, some headwind that they ran into and the business had to, you know, pivot or maybe even go out of business. That's not exactly what this company's worried about, but and so getting the management team excited, it's you know, this is, for one, the business owners care about you guys. They wouldn't just sell this so that they can chop it up and, you know, turn it into something else. They want you guys to be happy and have more opportunity, and they want the best for their, you know, their clients, their business, and their people. So
Nice.
And then we structure bonuses at closing. It kind of helps a little bit, but
yes.
And you know, we typically structure those bonuses in kind of two parts. First is at closing, half at closing, half in a year, because after about 6 months, everyone kind of sells in. They're like, oh, okay, the world's not ending. I just needed to get through 6 months to feel comfortable, and this is the new normal. And at a year, usually they're totally fine. But, you know, Biggs Cofer actually just went through a transaction ourselves.
Yes.
And that was interesting because I had, you know, never really gone through a transaction and had to sign this big, long employment agreement. It did feel like a little uncomfortable, even though I knew what was happening. It felt a little uncomfortable. And you fast forward now, we're about 7 months in, and we have so many more resources, and everything has, nothing's changed. It's been, Chris is still leading the charge. I feel like we can deliver better services to our clients. And you know, the longevity of our, you know, of our legacy and our, you know, and Biggs Cofer is now more secure than it has ever been. So I feel really good about it.
That's pretty cool that you can say from the other side, this process works.
At first I was like, am I the baddie? Am I, if I got this wrong? But no, it's been totally fine. Yeah. Everyone's happy. We haven't lost any managers. We lost a couple of associates, but they were leaving anyway. But everyone's been extremely happy.
So when all is said and done and all the paperwork is signed and all of the transactions are in, you know, in the bank, how do you say bye after like that intense of a time period with someone and
being on,
like,
the phone
getting
with
them
every day for an
yes.
hour, working so closely with them. I'd say every client that I have run a deal on, I have become very close friends with, catch up, you know, it really sucks. And I had one client, actually I've had, one recent client that was like, well, we're still gonna be friends, right? I'm coming to your wedding when you get married, right? And I was like, yes, but first I have to be dating someone.
Do you know anyone?
Do you know anyone? But it's really tough. It hurts. Like, it really sucks going from having, you know, making these deep relationships and then having to back away slowly as you're, you know, as the transaction's over. And, you know, I try to maintain the relationships as best as possible, but I can't be talking to you every day for an hour now, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's really special, honestly. Like,
it seems
being
like
able
it.
To see, I kind of always describe it as kind of like being a wedding planner, right? You're like, this is the, you know, this is a marriage, and it's going to be, you can either do a good job with the wedding or a bad job with the wedding, and you want to make sure that it's just the perfect day for them, and everyone's super happy after the marriage. But yeah, I really enjoy, you know, developing those relationships and then maintaining them and making sure that they're happy, you know.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you found your home.
Yeah.
It's been good.
AMAA has been such a great resource, you know, especially since, once again, I came from accounting and didn't know anyone in the industry, and I've developed so many great relationships. Like you said, Chris used to come and I used to follow him around. Now I just go and meet with all the people that I enjoy meeting with and catching up. So, yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you're here, and thanks for being on the podcast. Thanks for letting me yank you off the street.
I needed to get picked up off the street.
You stray, you. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you.
These kinds of conversations are happening all the time. We'd love for you to join in, whether it's through our monthly webinars, our biannual conferences, or our SEMA certification, and then we have our chapter events across the nation all year round. You can find out more at amaaonline.com. Until then, see you next time.